Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slam and pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 237. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are live and living, colored and funky like a monkey, if you will. Of course, I am your host, Chris Featherstone. Another week to have some fun on the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Ladies and gentlemen, we are officially kicking off 237 episodes, 4.5 years on the show. I don't even know how many people I've interviewed, 50, 60, 70. Somewhere around there. We are officially kicking off the Facebook Live. Of course, we are live on Blog Talk Radio, and we are also live right now on the Facebook Crave Wrestling Facebook page. It's going to be a lot of fun, so submit your questions there for this awesome guest I have right now that's coming on the show. This week, I'd like to feature a former WWE Cruiserweight Classic competitor. We're going to have some fun talking with the one, the only, the high top bro. Without further ado, Mr. Anthony Bennett, how are you tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Can't complain.
Fantastic, fantastic. So it's always great to see, you know, what made someone be so interested in professional wrestling. Usually the people I interviewed before, it was a person they watched on TV as a kid, or some gym opportunity, you know, someone at the gym saw them. What was it about professional wrestling that you got interested in that made you say, you know what, this is it for me. I want to be a professional wrestler.
Honestly, just watching Scotty Too Hotty and Kay Quick and guys like that, the charismatic guys that have fun dancing and being characters, basically is what got me into pro wrestling. I was like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to be those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, Scotty Too Hotty. You know what's so funny? I've always liked his character as Scotty Too Hotty, but I have never had anyone in the four and a half years that I've had this show, I've never had anyone ever say they were inspired by Scotty Too Hotty, but that's very interesting. Was it the worm that sold you?
It was definitely the worm. The entire entrance, the worm is what sealed the deal. Like, I was, 'cause, like, when I was a kid, we did talent shows, we did plays and we did Soul Train lines, and mm-hmm. me and one of my friends would always do the Rikishi dance. I would always want to do Scotty Too Hotty. I would just want to go out and do the worm. The worm was like my signature.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, that was around Attitude Era, around late 90s. Yeah. 99, 2000, 2001 is when, Too Cool was real big. So that's really, really awesome. So it was basically the character that you saw that attracted you to want to endeavor in wrestling. Who was it that, as far as the skill, you mentioned another name, who was it that
K-Quick,
you saw?
Mark Smith?
Yeah. K-Quick. K-Quick, who became R-Truth and was Ron and Truth Killings in TNA. So what was it about K-Crick? Was it the Get Rowdy rap that got you?
Yeah, it was definitely the Get Rowdy rap. It was always just, I mess around when I was in lunch at recess. I just, we're getting rowdy, just start dancing, doing it.
About to move some things.
Yeah, definitely me. I could not get away from that. Like, I could see myself getting in trouble all the time for either doing something Rikishi did on TV, either DX did, or just yelling Get Rowdy in class. It was always one of the three things I was always getting in trouble for in school.
Yeah. Now, was it because the thing is, a lot of people, you know, because we know R-Truth, especially just the role that he has now, but a lot of people, he is such a really, really good wrestler. A lot, you know, his comedy kind of overshadows his athleticism, but he's a really good wrestler. Was it his wrestling skills that kind of captured you and wanted you? Because, you know, both K-Quick and both, you know, Scotty Too Hotty are actors. Who was it that you saw the wrestling ability to say, you know what, I kind of want to mimic that? Was it, you know, when you were watching K-Quick, did you kind of, were there some moves that you were interested in?
Honestly, like, as far as wrestling-wise, I could say I was interested in their character, but to want to be a pro wrestler, I always wanted to be like Kane or Undertaker. Like 99 Kane, when, like, right around, the first episode of wrestling I watched was when Kane and Undertaker slammed the stairs on Vince McMahon's ankle.
Oh, okay.
And ever since then, I wanted to be like that. I wanted to be that big guy just walking around without a care, just feeling like you're indestructible. But clearly size isn't on my side. So, you know, I figured I could dance. So let me just try to be one of these guys.
Yeah. So what was it? What year did you start wrestling professionally?
I started pro wrestling in 2012.
Okay.
Yep, August 2012.
So 4 years. What was it, like, what type of opportunity did you have there? Did you go to some school, or did you know someone who was inside the business? How did you get that opportunity?
Well, I started training at the Monster Factory, and the Monster Factory is located in Paulsboro. Paulsboro is a mat wrestling town, and we have a building Yes, we're in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a building that is for the mat wrestlers, where it's three wrestling mats, and then it's a gym. And the one day I went to the gym to work out, and then I asked one of the guys to come roll around on the mat with me, and I saw the wrestling ring in there. So I called the wrestling coach and talked to him about it, and he said, oh, yeah, that's the Monster Factory guys. Just give them a call, you know, and talk to them about it. He said he didn't know too much about it. So right after that, I called Danny Cage, and everything else is just history now.
Nice. So around 2012 or before that, you know, because we're talking about 99, 2000, you know, a dozen years before you started. What was it within 2012 and before then that really got you hooked as far as, like, okay, this is exactly what I want to do? Was there any wrestling matches that you saw, or were there any wrestlers around 2012 that you watched and you really helped you make your decision?
I don't really know. Like, I know once I saw the Nexus take out Cena and how Cena had, like, once he had, John Cena had R-Truth and John Morrison, and I was like, oh, cool, you know, I like this. Like, I could rally behind this. This is, like, guys standing up for the business. Like, you start believing, you know, that everyone can stand up for something. Everyone has a part they want to play, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, this is something I want to do this. I want to be part of something, you know, be part of something major.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Ever since then, and that was roughly like 2010 on out.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I was hooked on me wanting to do it just because I want that, either whether I'm a good guy or a bad guy, you know, I want to be able to say, yeah, I stood for this. I tried to destroy the WWE, or I helped save the WWE, or wherever I go down the road. Like, I want to be one of those guys.
Yeah. The one that made the impact. Yeah. So that makes sense, because the Nexus certainly did do that. So what do you think about the Nexus run? Because, you know, a lot of people criticize it for being taken, you know, the rug swept under them too soon. Of course, you know, Daniel Bryan was suspended after, you know, he choked out, I believe it was Justin Roberts. And, you know, he came back, you know, for SummerSlam and was the guest. He was the mystery, you know, person on the babyface team. What do you think about the Nexus as a whole? Do you think that it ran its course well? Do you think that there was more life than the Nexus before they decided to end it?
I think they definitely could have had more life. Just me watching it as a fan, I loved it. I was definitely into that. I was a little upset once, you know, it broke, like they did the brand split or did the draft, and some of the guys from Nexus went to SmackDown and the rest stayed on Raw.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they definitely could have got more out of it.
Yeah, I agree. Because, you know, Wade Barrett was a star. I mean, he, you know, Ryback just recently said that, you know, the reason why Barrett was looked at as the leader is because, you know, he was just a pro, and his mic work was great, and he just really had that presence on, you know, to be that leader and have that leadership role. And I totally agree with him. I think that they missed an opportunity of giving him the world championship. What do you think?
Well, I could say that I believe he did miss an opportunity getting the world championship. But then again, like, you know, it's also, is he really done right now? You know, a lot of guys have injuries. We say we're taking time off. We might think we're done. We might think we ran our course. But we still get checked out, you know, and we're able to give it one last run. And I've been there plenty of times, even with Matt Wrestling. I thought, you know, I was done, but I was able to make a comeback and do pretty good. So maybe, you know, he still has I still think he might have a chance down the road.
Yeah. I think that's a very, very good point. So you did. So, you know, so you wrestle in New Jersey. There's some rich, you know, history as far as independent wrestling in New Jersey, specifically, you know, JCW, Jersey Championship, Jersey Pro Wrestling, rather, JPW. You know, people like Robbie E., people like, you know, Jay Lethal, Lance Anoa'i. There's a lot of rich history with Jersey Pro. Have you ever wrestled for Jersey Pro, or what other independent wrestling companies did you wrestle in Jersey?
I've just been at the Monster Factory, to be honest. You know, stay close to home. But I am open for bookings now. Started taking more bookings. You wanted to start a foundation, get my name out there. Now people know who I am, so now I can start actually going out there more than just staying in one spot. I just wanted to stay before and learn while I still can before an ego starts to develop, you know.
Yeah.
But Yeah, but right now I'm still in the process of learning. I just left training like not too long ago, actually. Mm. And I'm still, you know, I'm even me just leaving the classic a couple months ago. I'm still training, still trying to learn more. But, you know, and that's the thing. I'm trying to go other places too. Like, I wouldn't mind working or wrestling at a Jersey Pro just to see different styles, just to learn from different people that they have on their shows and going other places also.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, the fact that you were in WWE, you know, the Cruiserweight Classic, one of the hottest, you know, programs in WWE this entire year. That's phenomenal. And, you know, to be able to, you know, come on interviews like this and get your name out there, especially, you know, having that opportunity to compete in the WWE is really, really fantastic. Now, I'm really interested and curious to know, how did you get scouted out? You know, who was it that gave you the opportunity? How did you get the call for the WWE? And did someone go to the Monster Factory to scout out talent for the Cruiserweight Classic? And how did they even know about the Monster Factory?
Mr. Briscoe, Gerald Briscoe came in 2013. He was just looking at talent, and he heard I had an amateur wrestling background.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he was fascinated by it, and he told me, he's like, okay, kid, I'm going to come back next year. This is what I want you to do. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. I want you to gain 10 pounds. And from there, once I gained the 10 pounds, he's like, okay, good. I see you listened. You know, you packed on a lot of size. You're developing a character. You're becoming more and more comfortable with wrestling. So now I want you to gain another 15 pounds. Be at this weight, and I'm going to see what I can do with you when the time comes. He said he wants me to stay focused. He said he wants me to still keep learning. And I just stay with it. And he would message me every now and then just, hey, kid, how's the progress going? How are you doing? And telling me, you know, I'm doing good. I'm having trouble right now with this. My head's not in it. And it's just certain things. He'll be like, well, you know, we don't give up. Wrestlers never give up. You know, times are always hard. You got to push through. And it's just certain things like that, you know. And it's sometimes, you know, just me talking to him a lot, it's certain things I feel comfortable with. Talking to him that you might not feel comfortable talking to, let's say, my trainer at the Monster Factory, Danny Cage, or one of the other trainers or coaches there at the Monster Factory, just because he's like, I'm not too worried about the last shot because I know he's helping me and I know the trainers are there to help me, but I know, like, I feel more comfortable with him just because he's more in your face, basically. He won't beat around the bush, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, yeah, because he's got that experience. He's got, you know, 40 plus years of experience in the business, and that's really awesome. So, did he give you the call to come on the Cruiserweight Classic, or was it someone else?
Yes, he put my name in for the Cruiserweight Classic. He messaged me ahead of time, and was like, listen, kid, this is what's going to happen. I want you to be ready. You're going to be on a cruiserweight. You're going to be in a cruiserweight tournament coming up. So get your head ready. I don't need you to do anything stupid. And
yeah,
I made sure I was ready. Awesome. I made sure I did everything I could to get ready for it.
How was your gimmick created? The hot top and the double black.
It started just. I one of the trainers at the Monster Factory wanted a hair versus sideburns match. Me and him were working a series of matches, and we upped the stakes a little bit. We said, you know, it could be a hair versus sideburns match, and he was like, well, you don't have hair to grow. I was like, oh, trust me, I'll grow my hair out. Then we set this date, and I grew a nice little Michael Jackson afro, early Michael Jackson, Jackson 5.
Yeah.
And we went from there. Then we had the match. I won the match, so I kept the afro for a little bit. Then I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not feeling the afro. I can't really do too much with it. Then I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to do something else with it. And one of the other coaches was like, why don't you try getting the kid in play? I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to try that.
Mm-hmm.
Got the cut, liked how it looked. And I was like, okay, now, you know, I got the hair. Now let me see what else I can add to it. So as the time started going on, I was like, I'm going to say maybe right around Halloween time, I saw glasses, a pair of shutter shades in one of the stores. And I was like, you know what? Actually, I'm going to get these and I'm going to try to put them on my hair and see how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Did it. I liked how it looked. And everything else just took off from there. You know, it's just I wear two shades now and then. People ask why, you know. And it's simple. I tell everyone my hair has a personality of its own. And we just leave it at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So how is it the maintenance that, you know, big, tall, high top fade? Like, is it, do you have to sleep a certain way? Is it a daily thing? How is it to, how's the maintenance for that type of hairstyle?
Oh, man. Oh, the maintenance is ridiculous. I don't really sleep a certain way. I just know when I wake up, depending on how I sleep. Sometimes I sleep on my left side. Sometimes I sleep on my right. Sometimes I sleep on my back. And
yeah.
No matter which way I sleep, my hair is leaning the opposite direction. So if I'm laying on my left side, my hair is leaning to the right. Then if I'm on my back, it's like pushed all the way forward. So me sleeping a certain way does not help at all.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, there's certain things you got to do to, you know, really, you know, make a name for yourself in the business. So, you know, stuff like that is, it comes with the territory. So, awesome time, man. So, you know, let us know, you know, here's an opportunity to really push yourself. And I really wish you the best, man. Where can we find you on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at High Top Bennett. That's HIGHTOPBENNETT. And I'm on Instagram at Bennett Ant, BENNETTANT.
Awesome. Fantastic. You have any bookings coming up?
I will be at the Monster Factory this Saturday. And the show starts at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6 p.m., but I say get there at 6 p.m. because we do have some pre-show matches. You never know. Sometimes I'm on a pre-show match. Sometimes I'm on main card also, you know. So, and there's a chance where you could get to meet some of your favorite wrestlers, too. We still have guys from Ring of Honor coming in. We have a bunch of guys coming into the show this Saturday. So, again, and that's at the Monster Factory. The address is 541 Mantua Avenue, Paulsboro, New Jersey. And the show starts at 7. Tickets are $10.
Fantastic. And last question, how often did you interact with Triple H in the Cruiserweight Classic?
We've had our fair share of crossings. When I was down there, I spoke with him a couple of times when we were going over the parade entrance. Me and him were joking around. He's just, yeah, you know, I want to cut your hair off. You know, we should do this. We should give you a Gumby. He's like, oh, what if I stick googly eyes in your hair? I was like, oh, I'm already on that. That's already underway. But he's like, oh my gosh, I love this kid.
Nice.
You know, it's fun to see guys that have a serious part, just more relaxed. You know, he did seem relaxed. He seemed like he was having fun with us. So.
Yeah. That's awesome. I really wish you the best, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing your name all over the internet and, you know, all over the television soon.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Thanks a lot, man. You have a great night.
You too. Be safe.
Thank you. Bye.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free, on mine. Let's go.
The whole squad is making it clear we taking this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings. You see in us, but our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo, cause the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Das Wunderkind, with the strength of 100 men, with one intent, to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, using God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak. That's too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we repping that wolf pack. The foundation's shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors, with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
And once again, a special heartfelt thank you to Anthony Bennett, a former WWE Cruiser Classic competitor. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have an action-packed night tonight. We got so much to talk about, so we don't have any time to waste. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, guest co-host, he is the co-host for the Presidential Series. This is third time on, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about some politics and, of course, wrestling. We got No Mercy. We have Raw, we have SmackDown. The flavor of the week this week is the top five people who Brock Lesnar should put over. So we'll be talking about that too. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you Todd Fisher. How are you tonight, sir?
Let's do this.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Sorry, did I wake you up?
If you would have woke me up, you wouldn't be calling on the show right now.
Part is I know that you're wearing headphones right now, so it just probably blew your drums a little bit.
Yes. No, but it's all good. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the debate talk. So last Sunday was the second installment of the presidential debate. And, a lot of people are saying that, just about two thirds of the people believe that, actually it was about 57%. So, just about two thirds of people thought that, Hillary Clinton won. However, Donald Trump was kind of applauded for not winning. I mean, Clinton decisively won, according to polls throughout. However, people believed that Donald Trump was strong enough. He wasn't very strong, but he was strong enough to stay in the fight. Before Donald Trump came on the debate this time, you know, there were talks about, people. It got as far as people hoping that, he totally just, kicked the bucket and that would allow for a much more civil, a much more experienced Mike Pence to take the throne. However, he was critiqued as holding his own enough for him to continue to swing, flail, basically. So what are your thoughts of those assessments from the majority of the debate watchers?
Well, I think Trump was very successful in the mission that he was given. I think he was given the job, go out there and stop the hemorrhaging, stop the bleeding. They're losing supporters left and right. Get out there and stop it. Stop it from happening. And in that, I think he was successful. I think he was a lot more controlled than he was in the first debate. Of course, they made a big deal of his pacing back and forth behind her, which whatever. So the man was, he was waiting for his chance. And I know when I talk right now, I'm on my phone. I'm walking back and forth across my living room while I talk, just because, you know, I sit on my behind all day long and talk on the phone. When I'm doing it in my personal life, I like to be able to move around. I like to be able to walk back and forth. That's just how some people are. Am I creeping on someone? Am I menacing anyone? No, I'm alone in my living room walking back and forth and having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trump had absolutely, and you can't deny that. You could deny it. But I think Trump had the line of the night. And I know I was laughing my behind off when Hillary says, well, thank goodness, you know, you're not in charge of the laws. And he hits her with a, yeah, because you'd be in jail. I'm like, ooh, uppercut.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing on that jail thing. And again, I think I have to say this every week. The disclaimer is I'm voting for neither. That's the disclaimer. Mm-hmm. But here's my issue with the jail reference. Okay, if it was just a joke, well, first of all, he's running for president, so saying stuff like that kind of shows your ignorance, because the commander-in-chief can request, but he can't demand anything. I mean, he did refer to his attorney general before that, but he did say you'd be in jail. The commander-in-chief doesn't have that power to impose jail time on someone, specifically for things that have yet to be incriminating to her. Now, you know, we can all accuse that she does have some incriminating things, which I personally believe she does. But, you know, he doesn't know that to make such a bold statement.
I think he's simply saying exactly what the rest of us are thinking. If it was anyone other than Hillary Clinton who did what she has done, who's been proven, not we think she did, not we assume she did, but proven that she has done, they would be in jail, or at least, at the very least, would be under indictment.
But here's the thing, though. The FBI has
been thinking.
The FBI has proven that nothing within her emails or the investigation is incriminating. Is it a personal civil reputation blow? Yes. She deleted 32 to 33,000 emails, and she ignorantly doesn't know what a C means when it comes
ignorance
to
is no excuse of the law to the law.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, and that's true, but again, at the same time, there's nothing, based on the FBI investigation, and this is information that we've all received, you know, from the media, based on the FBI investigation, there's nothing within that ridiculousness that's incriminating. So I don't understand that, the whole jail thing. And the thing is, you know, typical Trump, he doubled down on saying that to the point where he's made it a he's made a quote and put it on Facebook and Twitter. So that is his approach. And again, you know, I just don't understand this type of approach and hoping that he would be able to win. Again, you know, it's gotten to the point where we've talked about stopping the bleeding with losing his base. That is basically the standard that we're at right now with Donald Trump. That is a very, very low standard to say at this point in time. You know, 4 weeks to the day, right now, 4 weeks to the day of Election Day, we're saying that the standard of Donald Trump right now is to stop the bleeding of his base, which is declining and declining. Before, you know, the debate on Sunday, a couple weeks ago, he was winning, I believe, four battleground states, Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, and I believe it was Michigan. It may have been a different one. But going into the debate, he was winning. It all flipped around. He was winning none of those states. And now he has the worst lead. He has the worst deficit of the entire head-to-head process, down 11 points. And, you know, basically almost at the 11th hour. How does Donald Trump supporters, you know, explain that?
Well, I mean, I think it all goes to the revelation of the tape that was just found on Friday,
mm-hmm.
which if you believe
quote, quote,
that they
unquote,
just,
quote, unquote,
found,
just
that
found,
tape,
quote, unquote, just found.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess you can't hear my air quotes that I'm doing.
Your
right
air
there.
Quotes, yeah.
My
your
air
Chris
quotes.
Farley quotes.
Like, exactly. You know darn well they've been waiting. They've been waiting for the moment to release that tape.
Oh yeah.
And you and I have talked off the air. We talked earlier today at work, and we talked a little bit. I've decided to take kind of a Paul Ryan stance. I will no longer publicly defend.
Yes.
Nor support Donald Trump. How I vote in 4 weeks is now up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you I'm not voting for Hillary. But whether or not I vote Trump or third party is in the air right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you going back to the debate, and when they started that debate, and, you know, the first question, of course, is about that tape. And we talked about it briefly, how Trump was trying to point out that, you know, in this world that we live in where ISIS is such a problem and all these things are a problem, we're going to talk about something I said 10 years ago. It's the point he was trying to make, but Cooper just wouldn't let it go. And this is why I've decided to withdraw any of my support, because Anderson Cooper kept asking him, so you've never done this.
Right.
And he didn't answer. You've never done this. And he didn't answer. And it's something as a father and all of you out there that are parents, and if you're young and you have parents, know what about Anderson? I don't think Anderson Cooper was asking a question he didn't know the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
He was giving Trump an opportunity.
Way out.
He was giving him an out. And
yep.
Trump doubled down on it. And I guarantee you, well, I can't guarantee, but I truly believe that in the next couple days, coming real soon, there's going to be another tape revelation. There's going to be videotape. Someone's going to step forward and accuse Donald Trump of doing exactly what he was talking about on that tape.
Yeah.
And boom. Any support that Trump had left evaporates.
Yeah.
Or rightfully so.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it evaporates. I mean, here and again, this is, I say this, you know, people like yourself is a good example. You know, you're a Ted Cruz apologist. You're a Ted Cruz guy.
I'm an apologist. I'm proudly Ted Cruz.
Well, you can be an apologist and proudly. I'm a Christian apologist. I'm not a shameful Christian. Being an apologist means that you're defending someone. So you're.
I'll accept that terminology then.
Yeah, I mean that's what an apologist means. You're
okay.
to, It means to defend. You look at the word. It means to defend when it comes to debates or when it comes to, you know, basically your worldview. I'm a Christian apologist. And, you know,
I'm a Chris Featherstone apologist then, whatever.
but and here's the thing, you know, there's when it comes to Donald Trump, you're going to have the people who, no matter what, you know, and I had this conversation with a friend of mine through Facebook, you know, and I've gotten to the point where I understand how to handle avid Trump supporters. Okay, so my logic is this, especially for you know, Christian supporters, avid supporters, I would say. Let me put that operative word there. You know, aside of saying that he is the second coming of Satan, there's nothing that can come out in the media that's going to stop someone, you know, from voting Donald Trump. I mean, you see that with Kellyanne Conway. You see that with Kayleigh McEnany. You say that you see that with Andy Dean. You see that with Jeffrey Lord. You know, all of these people, it does not matter what happens with, especially Cora Lewandowski. Oh, my Lord. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what comes out in the media. There's always going to be a spin. Always, always, always a spin. You can corner one of those people. You can corner them and you can press them straight to a corner, and they'll admit that it was wrong, just for you to back up a little bit for them to spin it again. So that's basically what the avid Trump apologists are saying nowadays. I write politics for the Inquisitor. I get paid to write about politics, so I'm very, very entrenched in it. And I absolutely love it, and it's fun, and it's exciting. But it's like, it gets frustrating, you know, to look at stuff like that, that you have evidence right in front of you, and you're basically, what you do is you spin it to the point of it's always Hillary Clinton's fault. Now, here's the thing, and I've told you this before, I think it was even today, that Hillary Clinton is no less angelic than, you know, or no more angelic than Donald Trump is, you know, and that's the thing. If it was someone else, if it was a Mike Pence, if it was a Ted Cruz, if it was a John Kasich, if it was a Scott Walker or Jeb Bush, any of those possibilities, Hillary Clinton would be absolutely destroyed. Because
I think she can handle Kasich, but whatever.
You said who?
Kasich. I think she would destroy Kasich.
You think so?
Oh yeah.
I don't think so, because I think that John Kasich reaches to the, okay, I can understand your reasoning of why, because he's very bipartisan.
Well, it's not just that, it's his connections, it's his really direct ties to like Goldman Sachs and other banking, which, you know, we can, you know, because of leaked documents, we can tie the same banks to Hillary, but those are leaked. He's publicly been linked to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can definitely understand that. I just think that John Kasich would reach I think that he'd do a better job reaching the moderate independent, you know, voter that's kind of on the fence. And I think that the scandals of Hillary Clinton with the emails, the Benghazi and so forth. Like you said, Goldman Sachs, you know, the affiliations with them. I think that those would be exposed more now because, you know, you have someone level headed like John Kasich, and, you know, Hillary Clinton would be kind of like the bad guy in this equation. But now with Donald Trump, he's creating stuff to talk about, and that's the thing, and it's like you have two brothers basically. You have the big brother and the little brother. You know, it's like they both did something to get in trouble to their parents, but you know, the big brother was the one who was trying to talk his way out of it, and that he got in the most trouble. But they did the same exact thing. Both the big brother and the little brother did the same exact thing, but the one who was talking and didn't be quiet got the most trouble. And that's basically how I feel about this election.
You know, and now that you say that, it really makes a lot more sense, because I don't know how much of the current WikiLeaks email scandals you've looked into, that because it's getting worse. It seems to be getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
Because the latest revelation to come out, there's thousands of these emails. I've read some of them. I haven't been able to dig through all of them, but one of the bigger ones. And then you and I talked about one earlier that came out, is that Saudi Arabia and Qatar apparently are financing ISIS. And the same people that are financing ISIS are donating money to, guess who? The Clinton Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So that came out.
And that's huge.
That should be front page.
Yep. Sure should.
And
absolutely.
Then not only should it be front page, then that ties, you know, I'm sorry if there's anyone that's a big Barack Obama supporter, but guess who just tried to block the U.S. and the victims of 9/11 from suing Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
Barack Obama. Which makes you wonder, why does he want to protect them so much? Everyone says oil, 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 but here's a revelation, folks. We get very little oil from the Middle East. Everyone, they say that that's the reason, and people say that's the reason why we went into Iraq. We don't get our oil from there. We get our oil from Mexico and Canada, primarily.
And Alaska as well, yeah.
Yeah, and then Alaska. We have vast, huge amounts of oil under Texas and Oklahoma and out in the West.
Yeah.
There's vast amounts in Florida and Louisiana. We don't get hardly any oil from over there. All the oil contracts that came from Iraq went to Russia and China.
Yep.
We did not go to war for oil. Get over it.
Right.
I hate when people say that. It drives me nuts. I was there. I know.
Yeah. That's very good point.
These Podesta, I think it's Podesta, is the current batch that we're going through, where Hillary Clinton called black voters mindless shopping carts.
Yeah.
Called Bernie supporters basement dwellers. And then she has her very own basket. And like she called Trump supporters the basket of deplorables, she calls her own supporters the basket of losers in an email that you can read. It's out there, folks, to look at it.
And here's the thing, Todd. You know, and the sad part is this. There's an unwritten rule for people of my culture to vote a certain way because of some, you know, fairy tale that was promised to us, you know, during LBJ era, you know, 50 years ago, you know, 50 years of, we're going to bring you guys up and we're going to do this and we're going to help you guys with this. And, you know, 50 years later, it's the same thing. You know, but it's there again. It's an unwritten rule, and it's sad because, you know, a lot of Democratic nominees feel that way. Like, I've got the black vote in the bag. I've got the woman vote in the bag, and you know, and that's why I wasn't so critical about, you know, Romney's, which really put his campaign down the tubes, but. Was it the 47% or the 40% or something like that? Yeah, the comment he made about that. But here's the thing, like I wasn't as critical about that as everybody else because he understood, like, hey, there's certain people who are going to vote a certain way just because mom said and dad said and grandma said and granddad said and they heard about it. And that's basically there's if I don't write the if I don't vote this way, I'll, you know, basically be debased. is what it boils down to. And
well, we had this conversation not too long ago about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About how people are afraid to walk away from their culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's sad. And I don't think it's a necessarily walking away from the culture. I would say the word enlightenment. I would use that word. At least digging in to see the why behind the what. You know, and why, you know, why am I doing this? Why am I voting this way? What, you know, have I looked deep enough to know that this person is who I should vote for? Because, but I'm looking at the transcript right now, and I just want, you know, just talking about what you were saying as far as him not initially denying, you know, about the tape. Basically, Cooper comes right out the gate, basically saying, asking the question. And the sad part is this. Cooper says the question, Mr. Trump, about the tape that was released on Friday, as you can imagine, you called what you said locker room banter. You described kissing women without consent, grabbing their genitals. That is sexual assault. You bragged that you have sexually assaulted a woman. Do you understand that? He said, no, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understand what was. That was locker room talk. That's called minimizing. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it, but this is locker room talk. He talks about the ISIS, medieval times. Yes, I'm embarrassed by it. Cooper says, so, Mr. Trump, and he interrupts and says, and we should get on to more important things, much bigger things. Cooper says, just for the record, though, are you saying that what you said on the bus 11 years ago, that you did not actually kiss woman without consent or grope woman without consent? Okay, right there should have been, I said it, it was wrong, I didn't do it. Instead, his response was this: I have great respect for woman. Nobody has more respect for a woman than I do. That's not saying no. Cooper comes back and says, so for the record, you're saying you never did that. Again, an opportunity number two to say, you're right, I never did that. Instead, his answer was, I've said things that, frankly, you hear these things I said, and I was embarrassed by it. But I have tremendous respect for women. The second opportunity to say no. Cooper says once again, have you ever done these things? He responds, and women have respect for me. And I will tell you, no, I have not. So it took him four opportunities to say no, and he brushed it off when he said no. No, I have not. And I will tell you that I'm going to make our country safe. So basically, that's a deflection tool. You've had four opportunities to say no. You say no on the fourth opportunity, and you deflect it. That's, I believe, the reason why he's 11 points down now, because people don't think that answer is genuine.
Well, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's because of that answer. I think it's just the general consensus. Most guys, sorry, bro, you're on your own on this one. I'm not gonna cop to say, yeah, that's locker room talk. We all do it. And we do, as guys, we do say crass and crude things when we're alone, especially, when we're not saved and we don't have something guiding, a bigger purpose guiding us, which is one thing. But to claim that you're kissing girls and grabbing them in an inappropriate way, that's a step beyond, I think, in some way. And even this, he would have said, you know what, yeah, I've probably kissed a few women that maybe they didn't necessarily want it. Because haven't we all tried to go for that kiss?
Mm-hmm.
We misread a signal, went for a kiss, and it was shut down. I mean, when you were, I know when I was younger, You know, I'm not a young man anymore, but when I was younger, I'm sure I grabbed a few heinies in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That nowadays I'd probably be in jail for, but back then, I'm grabbing a heinie, whatever, maybe get slapped, maybe get, stop it. You know, that's something completely different. And if you would have just said, you know what, maybe in the past I may have kissed a girl and read a signal wrong, or I grabbed a heinie, you know, that would have been one thing. But he just says no. That's what I'm saying. Anderson Cooper, the way he pressed that tells me he knows something that you and I don't know yet.
Exactly. And that's the reason, and that's my point. You know, you said that it wasn't the answer, but I disagree. I think it was the answer that swayed people more at people and was so criticized because he had four opportunities to say no, and even Cooper pushed him, and he said, for the record, two times when he responded back to what Trump was saying, when he was cornering him in, he said, just for the record, though, and he said, I have great respect for women. So I think Trump is aware enough to understand, you know, the power of media, who can trace things as this whole conversation from 11 years ago on a bus. You know, so basically the thing is, he tried to corner him and say, just for the record, just for the record. So for the record, you're saying you never did that? And so, you know, and that's the thing. I don't think that he wanted to say no, because Anderson Cooper kept saying, for the record, for the record. And, you know, you've got 4 weeks, and I agree with you. I'm on the same boat as something else is going to be released that, you know, for the record, him saying no is now on the record. And, yep. You know, that's how are you going to spend that? How are you going to spend flat out saying no, not admitting to it, and then other things get released?
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like I said, you're right. You're right with what you said earlier. There's no way a narcissist like Trump is going to ever step aside, even
right.
though he should, because at this point, I unfortunately feel that it's unwinnable. And I think if he were to step to the side and let Pence step up, the vacuum that would be created would draw so many supporters to Pence.
Mm-hmm.
Pence would just come out, compared to the two of them, compared to Trump, he is an absolute altar boy.
Yeah.
No matter what dirt you can dig up on him, he's an altar boy.
Yeah.
And compared to the corruption of Hillary Clinton, he's more moderate, even though, you know, if you really dig deep on Pence, you know that he's actually a conservative, but because we have gone from the extreme the two extremes, he seems more moderate, you know?
Yeah.
So I think you'd get a lot of undecideds that would jump on board with Mike Pence in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, this becomes a whole different campaign, and a campaign that becomes almost unwinnable, I think, for Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely, because it's not a lesser of two evils premise anymore. You know, that's basically the premise of this election. It is the lesser of two evils. If Pence was at the helm of the Republican Party, that premise would be destroyed, because there's nothing. I mean, you know, the left can grab some views that he thought as far as gays in the military, as far as LGBT rights, things like that, that he's, you know, said very harshly on his radio show when he did radio. But other than that, I mean, that's a morality factor that has nothing to do with corruption or dirt or anything like that. That's just, I mean, if you disagree with his moral views, don't vote for him. I mean, but that has nothing to do with morality and judgment and things like that. He's a very strong conservative who believes, you know, in biblical worldview and biblical principles. I mean, that's, if you disagree with that, there's nothing to criticize about that. But at the same time, there's no, I mean, you know, I'm sure that there's something that you can dig from Pence. There's some, but like we're both saying, there's something that you can dig about everybody. So, and that's basically out the picture.
If only that would happen. It would make 4 weeks from now so much easier.
Yeah.
But then
absolutely.
I get to think about that. With early voting and everything, if that were to happen, in the unlikely event that Trump steps down, and I'm not even sure, I don't think anything like that's ever happened. But in the unlikely event that were to happen, what happens to the early voting for people who voted for Trump?
Yeah, and they were talking about that too. I guess it's
Does their votes automatically go to Pence?
No, I don't think it grandfathers over the Pence. I think it'll just be just a wasted vote. Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to our headlines. Here we go. Get to our headlines. All right. Facebook Live, ladies and gentlemen. That's good stuff. So we had for a couple of weeks. I was like, yeah, do it. So, yeah, I'm enjoying being live on Facebook. And it creates a pretty cool archive, too. So, yeah, I think we'll do this every week, potentially. We'll see. At least through the election season. So we get 4 more weeks of going live. All right.
Did you figure out the audio part yet?
Oh yeah, yeah. We're good. We're good, and we're live, and people can
What's
hear
up,
you
Facebook?
As well. Yeah, absolutely. Paid suspended again for 60 days, but which is weird because let's spend probably about 6 minutes or so on this. Paid suspended again for 60 days, but she's injured, which may last up to a year. Supposedly there were some painkillers that were prescribed, which I think they should amend, the policy for. If there's a prescription to it, I don't understand why you're still being penalized for it. But, what's so just immature about Paige and young and juvenile about Paige is that for some reason she's getting all this money, this huge opportunity at, she started, what, 20, 21 in the WWE, and 24 years old, huge opportunity, all this money, multi-time, Divas champion, NXT champion, and you're allowing your relationship and just your hot-headed attitude to say something and tweet about your disdain of the situation. I would have shut my mouth and let these 60 days ride out and, go on the road to recovery. Why is Paige doing this to herself? She will not ever make this same money in any type of wrestling company that she is now. I think it's a horrible idea to be so impulsive to tweet something about just your disagreement at the sake of your job.
She's utterly right back in her way out of a job.
Pretty much, yeah.
Or would you prefer she's utterly Adam Rose-ing herself out of a job?
Yeah. Well, Adam Rose still wanted to be there. I interviewed him. He wanted to be there still. He still wanted to be there too. But there were some, it was more of a money thing for him. For Paige, though, I think it's just youth immaturity and just really hothead thinking. It really is. I mean, you have such a big opportunity and you're just, it's one of those things that Paige will probably most likely regret, in a year when she's wrestling back alleys in the UK.
Or she goes the route of China or Tammy Sitch.
Ooh.
One of the two.
Oh. Yikes. One of those led to death, unfortunately. So let's hope not that. Ric Flair. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I am hoping that's not the case, but man.
Of course.
Ric Flair, go on.
Yeah, let's hope not. So, yeah, Ric Flair refuses to comment on the Holly Berry scandal when asked by TMZ. I wrote an article on this on Sportskeeda, And, you know, it's really interesting. You know, the limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, willing, dealing, son of a gun is, you know, who kissed the girls and made them cry, as Ric Flair would always say. And the crazy thing about that is he was so vocal to say something about Halle Berry on his show, but when asked by TMZ, he had no comment. And then toward the latter part, the very, very end of the candid interview, you know, he said, you know, she's a great woman, a good actress or something to that nature. So, you know, is this, you know, living your gimmick too much that it just really backfired on you?
Phone call from someone that told him to shut his mouth.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it sounds like to me. I mean, if he was just living the gimmick, I think he would have come out and said, look, I was just living the gimmick, took it too far, I didn't mean to embarrass anyone, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I honestly think it happened. Now, before, I didn't think it happened, but now I really feel like it happened. Halle Berry is embarrassed by it, and her people told him to, dude, shut your mouth.
Hmm.
You know, yeah. We're going to, you know, lawsuit kind of thing, and he can't afford a lawsuit.
So here's the thing. What would the lawsuit be? What would the case be? Would it be...
Defamation of character? I don't know.
Defamation? Right. Well, that's not a defamation suit. I had sex with someone. How is that defaming someone? That's not a defamation. I mean, that would be a very weak defamation suit. And I'm studying forensics and PhD. So that would be a very, very weak defamation suit of saying, hey, I had sex with her. So, you know, if you have good lawyers,
it doesn't matter. The strength of the case doesn't matter. The very fact that they file a case, he now has to defend himself. He has to hire a lawyer. He can't afford to hire a lawyer. He's bankrupt five times over. Probably owes money to everyone in the face of the planet. I think he owes me $5, but he can't afford to defend himself. So it doesn't matter how weak that case is. People do it all the time. The Church of I'm gonna get you sued here, but the Church of Scientology strategically sues people to keep them from saying anything about them, simply for that fact, regardless of whether or not there's any basis of it.
Right.
They
so
sue people and sue people and sue people.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly the technique that they could use against Ric Flair, is just suing to get him to shut his mouth.
A gag order, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand that, but, you know, it's one of those things, you know, at this point he's, you know, signing, he's charging $4,000 for 5 minutes on the phone. That's pretty desperate. But yeah, I understand that logic. That logic makes sense. But I don't think at this point, what hurt this whole defamation thing? If Ric Flair had an attorney, they could countersue because of the remarks that were said by Berry and her reps, denying it. You know, basically a denial can say, hey, listen, you put my foot on the line by saying that this never happened. You know, so that can bring a strong case as well. But, you know, I can see your point. As far as the hush mouth, you know, I got a subpoena in the mail. Let's hush my mouth. But at the same time, again, you know, Ric Flair's character is on the line too by saying that. And then if we didn't hear anything from Berry, anything from her reps, as saying, you know, there's no comment or something like that, or just wasn't said anything, but just flat out denying it. It will be a lie if it really happens. So that can really, that could help Ric Flair in turn as well. Bret Hart rips the Freebird.
You mean someone in Hollywood lies?
Yeah. That never happens. So
never.
Bret Hart rips the Freebirds Hall of Fame induction and calls them pill heads. So the Freebirds are, You know what? You know what happened to the Freebirds? They just made the list.
Well, also, breaking news this week, water is wet, the sky is blue. Another probably very obvious thing. It was the 70s and the early 80s. Of course they're pillheads. Weren't they all?
Yeah. Including, you know, okay, yeah. This is a very sensitive show now. So, yeah, here's the thing. You know, I think you make a good point. I mean, to say that someone doesn't deserve to go in the Hall of Fame because they were pillheads, I mean,
does that take anything away from the performance that they had? Does it make them any less legendary? No,
nope.
It certainly does not.
Nope.
Does Hulk Hogan's controversial statements that he made, does it make him any less Hulk Hogan?
Nope. Not at all.
You can hate the actions of the men and the people behind the legend, but it doesn't change the fact of their legendary deeds.
Yep.
So, pillheads or not, they're still the Freebirds.
Indeed they are. Homeless man now involved in the Roberto El Patron stabbing. But here's the thing. I wrote an article Tuesday throughout the day, the afternoon, on Sportskeeda of some recent information that was said on the TAS show that said we're good, you know, and the situation is behind us. And here's just what I'm in my head at. What do you mean the situation is behind us? If there is a person who stabbed me multiple times to put a gash in my head, I do not want him to be on the street. If I'm arguing about, you know, my thing is if my wife and I were at a restaurant, someone tried to hit on my wife, and that led to a scuffle between me and the person stabbed me multiple times and had a big gash in my head, why would that situation be behind me? You have someone who was willing to stab me, you know, over a verbal altercation. I want that person off the street. What do you mean this situation is behind us?
Also, on a side note, Perry Saturn's been found again, apparently.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Almost
that he's
died stabbing.
Yeah, that's good.
No, yeah, I mean, it this story is getting more and more convoluted and confusing. It has more twists than a Mexican soap opera.
Yeah, or the Tasmanian devil. Yeah, it just gets worse and worse, man. There's one thing.
Oh, the webs we weave.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing about inconsistencies. I mean, like, but at the same time, I mean, you know, if there's eyewitnesses, you know, there's one person that's going to tell you this information, and this person is going to tell you that information that the other person might have left out, right? But there's still going to be a common thread of important things that are just not going to be omitted from, you know, a witness statement. Now, if you have two people that basically was in the altercation outside of the assailant, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all how, and the situation behind it. Yeah, someone stabbed me multiple times. You know, you can, that's manslaughter at the least, you know, attempted murder. You know, if I could have had some type of
assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's basically a charge that you can tack on 10 years for. So, you know, it just, for the sake of someone spending 20, 30 years in prison, don't worry about it. He's left off. He's probably, you know, he's someone with the same knife prone to stab someone again. It just, it doesn't make any sense at all. And then lastly,
have they found a police report yet?
No, no. I mean, again, you know,
has there been any reports from a hospital?
No. I mean,
I've seen those gashes. Those were not. Those are not, let's just throw a Band-Aid on them and move on with the day kind of cut.
Right. That,
so there's no hospital report, no police report.
It's suspicious to me. It brings the question up of were there just two people involved in this altercation, and those are the two people that's, you know, are in the headlines right now. The actual couple.
Starting to wonder if it even happened.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's pull of Ryan Lochte. But yeah, it's very, very interesting how that is. John Cena taking a hiatus after Survivor Series to film American Grit. So he'll probably be gone for the rest of the year. A lot of people know I'm not a Cena guy at all, but I'm starting to get indifferent. I didn't like Cena for a long time, but it's more of a indifferent type thing, especially since he's on SmackDown. I definitely think he's a really good asset to SmackDown. So, I mean, I think Cena's good for SmackDown. And I think that, they've elevated Styles and Ambrose enough that, you know, 4 to 6 weeks without John Cena, it wouldn't seem like a big loss.
No, you know what? I used to be a hardcore anti-Cena guy. I flipped on him during his U.S. champ challenge.
Yeah.
When I flipped on him, because he started putting people over. Before that, he was all about Cena. Everyone, the running joke, of course, is, you know, John Cena does not get pinned. And not only that, but he's now lost a main event on a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Yep,
so
plainly.
It's showing the maturing, I think, of John Cena and starting the generation over.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So what were your thoughts on No Mercy?
Well, and I understand why they did it, but I thought the main event at the beginning of the show was weird. You know, it was just, what?
Yeah.
We're doing this now?
Total debate.
But,
totally.
Yeah, I mean, rest of the card was pretty good. It was okay. It wasn't, you know, spectacular. But I think The Miz and Dolph completely stole the show.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since we went from that. I mean, when they first did the double submission hold on AJ, I'm like, oh, really? Didn't NXT just do this not too long ago? We're gonna do this and drag this out further.
Yeah.
But thankfully, they stopped it. And technically speaking, AJ Styles should have been eliminated from that match at that point.
Exactly.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty decent card. I mean, it was better than the last SmackDown exclusive special event they did on the network.
I think Backlash was better than No Mercy, just because I think the structure, and I've shared this before on Facebook, I think the structure of Backlash, again, 20 minutes, to me, taking 20 minutes out of a pay-per-view, just I think it just diminishes the integrity of it. I want a 3-hour pay-per-view. But outside of that, I didn't like the structure putting the main event first, because everything outside of Miz and Ziggler just spiraled from there. Wasn't a big fan of that at all. And I understand why they did it, but I mean, it undermines their fan base, though. Because you know, you're basically saying, you know, hey, you'll get a good hour from us from 8 to 9. After that, it's, you know, you guys, you'll probably turn the channel. So there you have it. And it's like, you know, make the best out of the people who's watching it for the entire time. There's some people who don't care about politics whatsoever. If you have one person watching that pay-per-view for the entire time, you better make it the best pay-per-view that person's ever seen the entire time. I mean, you know, I've interviewed so many people on the show, and they say that with different wrestling matches. You know, I remember interviewing Matt Sydal, and he was like, you know, I don't care who, I don't care how many people is outside the ring. I don't care what type of audience I have. I'm going to perform the best I've ever performed each and every time, because that one person, because I'm thankful for that one person. If it's one person that came in and bought a ticket, that is going to be the best experience that one person's ever had in their life. And the WWE's undermining their fan base by saying, well, you'll come back. And I think that that's a bad idea.
I can't disagree.
Yeah. So what were your, let's get to Raw and SmackDown here. I would do my audio soundbite, but you know, for the sake of doing it, let's do it. Raw and SmackDown. Here we go. Raw and SmackDown coming up. Like 8 minutes to do that and the flavor of the week. So give me a quick 90 on your thoughts of Raw and SmackDown.
Well, ever since this brand split, I've been a bigger fan of SmackDown than I have been of Raw, because I think it's a much better show because it's condensed into 2 hours. I've never been a fan of the 3-hour Raw, but that's just me. However, this week, I think Raw was a much more solid show. I like that they continue to build the club back into that machine that just destroys everyone, and it's just destroying everyone for the simple fact of destroying everyone.
Yeah.
To say, hey, you know, we belong at the top, and I like that they took away that no more games gimmick. They get rid of that, and they're now being what we who have watched them through ROH and New Japan know that these two can be, these monsters. And I'm so glad that they're finally getting back to that. I love that they're now teasing the split between Jericho and KO. So I really enjoyed that part of Raw. Then as far as SmackDown, you and I talked about it briefly on Facebook Messenger before you went live. If you have not watched SmackDown, or you watched briefly, you weren't paying attention, go back through and watch the AJ Styles, James Ellsworth. I'm really concerned about James Ellsworth, because I think the dude is just hilarious. He was great on Jericho's podcast. It seems like a guy who's just living the dream right now, but he took the Styles clash wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he went head down instead of head back, which took out Frankie Kazarian. It took out a few other guys.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really badly. Broke their necks.
Yeah.
He came, looked like AJ protected him on this one, but he came down flat on the front of his head.
Yeah, you can't tell.
I'm so concerned about him. I'll be checking dirt sheets to see if there's any injury report on James Ellsworth.
Yeah.
But I think SmackDown was pretty solid. Wasn't a great show, wasn't a terrible show. I think it was a solid show. It's a solid build.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning building blocks have been put in place. And why is Shane McMahon yelling at AJ Styles for being upset that Dean Ambrose, gave him the double arm DDT twice?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he has every right to be mad.
Yeah.
Heel or not, that was wrong.
Yeah.
No making sense storyline. Go on.
Yeah, and I wasn't a big fan of Ellsworth actually getting the pin either. I didn't like that. There could have been something around that as far as, I understand that it was an Ambrose thing. I get it. You know, I understand that Styles takes one for the team of being champ, but I didn't like that. There could have been a way to somehow got him DQ'd or something like that. That would have been probably better. But just taking an actual pin, I don't care if it's a fast count or not, I just wasn't a big fan of that. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the flavor of the week. Here we go.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
Got a couple minutes left. So, Todd, give me your top five people who Brock Lesnar should put over.
Oh, man. Number five, let's go with I would like to see him put over KO.
Okay.
Number four, I didn't even put much thought into this one this week. I'm sorry. Number four, KO, we'll go five, KO. Number four, Baron Corbin. Number three, it won't work now, but back in the day, I think Heath Slater. Have Randy Orton come in, hit him with the RKO, then he does the James Ellsworth with Heath Slater. But now it doesn't work. So let's put over Apollo Crews. That's what I was thinking of. Apollo Crews. Because Apollo Crews, we all know, is tremendously athletic. Needs that oomph to get him over that hurdle to say, okay, this guy's legit.
Yep.
Number two, I'd like to see him put over AJ Styles.
Okay.
Or at the very least, you know, with the help, with an assist from the club. And number one, Randy Orton.
Okay. All right, so my top five was number five, Cesaro. Number four, a baby face Bobby Roode. I think the glorious thing is going to get him so over that, you know, they're not going to have any choice but to turn him baby face. Number three, The Undertaker. A good clean win at WrestleMania will be a good way to send them off to me. Number two, Shinsuke Nakamura. They fought in New Japan, and yeah, that was really fun. That was really great. And so, time to bring it over. And the number one, I want to see Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns 2 at WrestleMania, since the first one ended with the cash in from Seth Rollins, and I think that Brock Lesnar should pass the torch to Roman Reigns because he is the face, the future of the WWE. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back. The road to election 2016 next Tuesday will be 3 weeks out, and I'm sure there's going to be so much more to talk about, just like we did today. Thank you so much for everyone who's listening on Facebook Live. Thank you so much for everyone who's listening live through Blog Talk Radio. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Please go to the Crave Wrestling Facebook page and hit the like button. Go to the Crave Wrestling Twitter page and follow. And go ahead and plug your podcast and any other endeavors in Twitter and whatever else you need to plug.
Make sure you listen to Off the Ropes podcast. New episodes every Thursday. We take a bit of a saucier look at all of the shows, including New Japan, Evolve, PWG, ROH, TNA, WWE. Follow me on Twitter, @BikeTodd on Twitter. And if you're enjoying the political conversation, make sure you hit me up on Twitter. Let me know if you're enjoying it or not. I've been trying to convince Chris here that we should spin this part off and become our own, do our own political podcast every week and discuss the hot topics of the week. If you're interested in that, tweet me. Let me know. I'll tag Chris in it, and we'll all convince him that we should do it together. That's it for me.
Sounds good. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the show. We are signing off 237. Until next week, you all enjoy your week at wrestling. And God bless, and we'll be back next week, God willing. Have a good night. Bye-bye.